For the final hour, Darren, Donnick, and Chase live here at Pete and Terry's Tavern. Predators and Flames tonight. 7 o'clock puck drop here at Bridgestone Arena. 6 o'clock pregame. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, that's me, Willie Donnick, Chase McCabe, and now Elliot Friedman. Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada, 31 Thoughts. Every week he is brought to you by Carey's Ire, Remax Elite. Elliot, tonight it is Nashville and
don't even
Calgary. Or is it Calgary?
You've already. He's been a good sport about this. There's no reason
why?
To go back.
They're playing Calgary,
no,
or
just,
is it Calgary?
Don't even go. We've already done this. Turn the page. Let him be.
Let him be.
Let it be.
Please don't say it.
Elliot, how you doing?
Look, it's not my fault that Kevin Pollock doesn't even know how to pronounce cities in his own country. Like, it just isn't.
By the way, we had Terry Crisp sit down with us in the second hour of the show here at the table at Pete and Terry's Tavern, at his tavern, and we played that clip, and we kind of gave him the little backdrop. Of course, Terry Crisp won a cup.
And what did he say?
Calgary. Oh, he was cackling. He was loving it. Well, he says Calgary.
Because he knows. He coached there. He knows it's not Calgary. Like, nobody calls it that.
Oh, I got to believe, by the way, we have to get the reaction up where you are Saturday night. We're sitting here in postgame on the heels of an 8-round shootout victory over the Blue Jackets here at Bridgestone Arena. But we've already seen all the deets coming out of Toronto with how the Maple Leafs lost to the Hurricanes. What was it like to see E-Bug come in there, David Ayers, and get it done for the Hurricanes?
Well, you know, I'm in the studio, and, you know, Reimer gets hurt early in the game. He's the starter that night, and the backup is Mrazek. And he has that collision with Kyle Clifford, and he goes out. And, you know, we've seen enough of these games to know that the E-Bug is there. So you're automatically looking, okay, who's the E-Bug for this game? And some of the guys knew that it was David Ayers because he does practice with the Leafs occasionally. And then all of a sudden, you know, he comes in. And, you know, it was kind of funny. So the Maple Leafs American Hockey League team also plays in Toronto. They play just down the street from where the Leafs do. They're called the Marlies. And he's got his Marlies mask on. And I think this is hilarious. And the fact that he's 42 years old, I mean, there's no 42-year-old goaltenders for a reason. I think Rene has got to be the oldest goalie in the NHL right now. So, you know, and then they score, and it's 4-2, and they score again, it's 4-3, and Toronto's suddenly within a goal. And all of a sudden, guys, the text started coming in from people around the league about what an embarrassment this was, and such a huge game because Toronto and Carolina are neck and neck in the playoff race. And people are saying to me, people in the league are saying to me, you know, this is embarrassing. A Leaf employee who's 42 years old goes into this game. There's so many millions at stake, and this is what they're seeing. And then he kind of, the Hurricanes and the goalie get to the second intermission, and everything kind of calms down. Like, people are thinking the Leafs are going to win 12-4. And, like, I knew people who were going online on their betting apps and putting hundreds of dollars down on the Leafs. Like, it was crazy. And then in the third period, the Hurricanes right themselves. They play an unbelievable period. They totally smother Toronto. The Maple Leafs can't do anything. And all of a sudden, the texts start going from what a disgrace this is to what a joke the Leafs are. They can't even beat this guy. And, you know, people were really happy for David Ayers. I think everybody's really happy for him. They milked it, obviously, in the last couple of days. Why not? It's going to be some of the greatest moments of his life and career. And, you know, I think you can think two things. I think you can think it was a great thing, but also you kind of have to make sure this can't happen again. I don't know if you want millions on the line. And it's like a 42-year-old goalie in the way here. So I have a feeling there will be some tinkering to the system next week at the GM meetings.
What do you think happened, Ellie? Is it just simply the stage in the market that you're in, that massive market that is Toronto, because we just had this happen last year with Foster in Chicago. And I know that the difference is Ayers actually recorded a win, but, I mean, what's changed where all of a sudden now it's like, this must be addressed? What changed?
Well, I think anytime something happens in Toronto or Canada, it's always a big deal. Like, I've heard people say, people have said to me that, yeah, this is only a big deal because it happened in the Maple Leafs. Well, it's kind of the way hockey goes. That does happen. If things happen in Toronto or they happen in Canada, yes, it's sort of like things happening to the Dallas Cowboys, right? Or things happening to the LA Lakers. They're always bigger than everywhere else just because of their place in the sport. So, yes, I do think that was a factor. I do think all the attention was a factor. You know, I know a couple of years ago at one of the meetings, they talked about teams should have to hire someone who works on their coaching staff as like a video assistant or somebody else, a guy who's recently been a goaltender at the pro or college or junior level. And, you know, they travel with the team. And if you get a situation, they can go in goal. And I know teams fought back because of the cost. They said, wait a second, you know, you're asking us to travel someone and pay for someone, and how much are they going to play? So there was pushback against that. One of the things, guys, I think that could become a conversation here is, you know, like I said earlier, there's no 42-year-old goalies for a reason. And because that's a really tough position to play at that age, although the Leafs made it pretty easy on them on Saturday. I could see a situation where they say there's got to be some structure to what kind of player we got here. Now, someone said to me, and I think it's very fair, that in Toronto you probably have 300 goalies you could pick from. In some of the areas, like, for example, Nashville, the pool, because hockey is still growing there, the pool might not be as deep.
Yeah, David Poole made that very point, Elliot, when we asked him about it. He said, well, the person has to live in Nashville. So the pool is very, very different, as you just pointed out.
Yeah, and I think that's very fair. And, you know, one of the things, like, I don't know, do you have to move someone to live in Nashville? Do you offer someone as a job? Does the NHL and the Players Association say, okay, we're going to split the cost and we're going to pay for someone to live in Nashville? I don't know. I don't know the answer to this, but I do think they kind of said, you know, like, you guys know this. If that hadn't worked and Carolina had gotten blown out, people would be destroying the league.
Yes.
They would be destroying the league.
I think you're right.
If the guy looked like he just
didn't belong. Seven goals, yes. It would. You're right. They would be crushing the NHL today. Still today 100%. From a Saturday game.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's like, and people would make, it would be all over all these organizations as a joke. Like, what a joke the NHL is. And so, you know, sometimes we talk about process versus result. It's like one of those games. Okay, say the Predators lose 6-3 the other night, but their expected goals for was 62%. Well, you say, okay, we didn't have a good result, but our process was good. Do you think anybody's happy with that? No.
Yeah.
But if your expected goals are 8%, but you win 4-2, wow, we got the right result. So that's what matters, right? So often the result tells the story and it gives everyone the reaction, but you can still look at the process and say, ooh, I don't know if we want to do that again.
Yeah, good points. Elliot Friedman on the line with us. So I said for weeks on the show that I thought, and I would stand pat at the trade deadline if I was David Poile, and indeed, minus Matt Irwin going to Anaheim, there were no additions, let's just say that, really, for the most part, like what we've been accustomed to, especially over the last 2 or 3 years. What do you make of David Poile saying, all right, this is the room that you're going to roll with, and it's up to you to dig yourself out of it and figure it out? And as we sit here today, because of the win Tuesday night, they are currently the last wild card team in. But what did you make of what David Poile essentially ended up doing on Monday, which was really nothing?
Well, I think that's kind of what most of us expected. We didn't, like you guys, I didn't think that he would bet on this team short term this year. And, you know, when you look at the Predators, you simply don't see a team that's been as good as what you guys have shown in the past few seasons. And I think you have to be very careful of short-term attempts when you're not like that. Unless you think you're going to win, or you think you absolutely have to add to get to the playoffs for your market, don't do that. And I can understand why he didn't. I think he did have Smith and Granlund out there. Just in preparing for this today, I think he set like a kind of price for maybe like a couple of second rounders would be the kinds of things that would make him think about moving either of those players. He didn't get that, so we just held. And to me, that's probably the smart play. I don't believe you just, like, people say, well, if the guy's going to walk, you give them away for something, so you get something and don't get nothing. I disagree with that. I think if you cave at the trade deadline, people remember. And they say, oh, David Poile, he caved last year on Smith and Granlund. He's going to cave this year, too. So I think it's better not to cave than to do it. I think he set a price, probably a couple second-rounders for each. And if he didn't get that, he wasn't doing it. And, you know, I still think, guys, like, depending on where the rest of the season goes for you guys, and, again, you have another huge game tonight, and they're all huge in now, I think that will determine whether or not he takes some of his more term guys and says, all right, we're testing the market on them too.
Elliot Friedman is with us, sportsnet.ca. And, Elliot, the teams that the Predators are competing with all did make some moves. And so let's start with Calgary and the two defensemen that they brought in. And I understand there's a very good chance it looks like Mark Giordano, their captain, and, of course, a Norris Trophy guy, gets back in there tonight to go with Derek Forbert and Erik Gustafsson. So what do you think of the improvements that the Flames made?
Well, I think they didn't do anything major. I think they thought about some major stuff, but nothing came. You know, they had the two injuries on defense. You mentioned Giordano could be back tonight. I think they felt it was important to plug those holes at a relatively inexpensive price. They traded for two players. One cost them a conditional third-rounder. The other cost them, like, a deeper pick. It wasn't significant, but I think they felt it was important to make those moves. Like, that's a place with market pressure. I think it's, when you miss the playoffs after finishing second in the league, I think you know you have your challenges from the market and from the owner. So I think that was a situation where they said, you know what, let's do some stuff to give us some depth that won't cost us a ton. And they responded really well with their last game, that win in Boston.
Got home from the Predators' win over Ottawa the other night, and I got to watch the third period of Edmonton playing in Anaheim. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Anaheim managed to win the game. But Edmonton and the trades they made, it looked like instant chemistry with Tyler Ennis and Andreas Athanasiou with Connor McDavid. And, of course, on Monday we're going to see that Edmonton team come through here.
Well, that was a situation where the GM there wanted to reward the players. Edmonton, I don't know what people expected this year. I don't think we expected they'd be great. I thought we expected they'd be better, and they've been really good. They've really improved. They've been a much more structured and lockdown team. They played really well when McDavid was hurt. They held their heads above water. They didn't fall apart. And I think that was a situation where, and they got a big injury on their blue line. They lost their best defenseman, Klefbom, for a while. So I think that the team, the organization there, the GM, Ken Holland, he felt their players needed to be rewarded. And he didn't have to pay a big price for a defenseman, Mike Green. He didn't have to pay a big price, a fifth rounder, for Tyler Ennis, who you just mentioned. And the one he battled with, and he wanted speed because McDavid's fast. He needed somebody who was fast to play with him. After the CU, him and Steve Yzerman had a bit of a tug of war. Steve Yzerman said, first rounder. Holland said no. I think he said 2 seconds. It was as far as he'd go. And finally, Yzerman agreed to it. But that was a situation where they felt like they wanted to reward their team. And they didn't have, they gave up 4 draft picks, but they didn't give up their first rounder. And I think they felt that was a fair price to pay to help their guys out.
When we were in Winnipeg not too long ago, it looked like the team was on the verge of coming to an agreement with Dustin Byfuglien to part ways to give them some salary cap relief. Why was that not resolved?
You know, it's a really good question. I checked with the Jets on Monday, the day of the deadline, and they were still hopeful that they could get something for him. I don't think that was going to be happening now. Bufflin's made it very clear he's not going to play this year. I think the interesting, and I think the Jets would have, if they felt there was something they needed to get or trade for to make themselves better now. Now, they did a couple of small things, but nothing big where they needed Bufflin's money. So, you know, I'm going to try to figure more about this weekend because we have them on Saturday night. But from what I'm hearing, you know, what happens if Bufflin decides he wants to play next year? You know, they have him under contract for another year, and there's a process in the NHL called tolling. And to basically explain this, and it happened with a player years ago in Ottawa who refused to play for the Senators, named Alexei Yashin. And the league ruled that because he didn't play all year, his contract didn't expire by a year, that he still owed them that season. And the Jets were asked about this the other day, and they said the league had left it in their hands. So what I'm thinking here is the Jets are waiting to see if Bufflin decides he wants to play again, and they either trade him to somebody to someone so they can get something for him, or they say, well, you owe us 2 years instead of one because you didn't play all of last year. So I just think it sounds to me like unless they all of a sudden out of nowhere throw him on waivers to break his contract soon, I just think that this story is not over. And that's probably not a good thing for reporters because we've got to keep chasing it.
Elliot Friedman is with us from Sportsnet. And I was reading in your 31 thoughts. We all know about the trade that didn't happen between the Islanders and the Wild with Parise and Ladd after they both waived their non-trade clauses. But you also have in here that Mikko Koivu was also in play. So what was it that just didn't work out with all of that?
You know, I'm going to give some credit to a reporter in Minnesota by the name of Mike Russo. He kind of got the most information about it, and I heard it from him yesterday. Apparently, what happened was it was supposed to be Parise and Mikko Koivu for Andrew Ladd, a first round pick, and a prospect named Kiefer Bellows. And I had heard Kiefer Bellows' name in there, and I knew Koivu had been, the Islanders were on Koivu before declined to waive his no trade. Well, Derek Brassard in New York, he broke his jaw, and the Islanders decided they needed a center. So when Koivu wasn't agreeing to go, they went out and they traded for Jean-Gabriel Pageau from Ottawa, and they gave him an extension. And in that trade, they traded a first-round pick. So all of a sudden, the first-round pick that the Islanders were sending to Minnesota was not available. So Koivu's out of the deal. The first-round pick is out of the deal. And it's not a trade that Minnesota really liked after that. And also, the numbers, you know, in terms of how it was going to work, it didn't appeal to the Wild either. So I think that's why it fell apart, but I think there's a chance it could still be revisited.
Big two games for the Predators to close out the month of February. Tonight against the Flames, Saturday night against Colorado here. So it'll be very interesting what the landscape looks like when we talk to you next Thursday. Elliot, we appreciate it as always. You have a great weekend.
All right, guys. You have a great weekend, too.
Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet, brought to you every week by Carrie Zier Remax Elite. When we come back, we're going to give you a chance to win a pair of tickets to that Avalanche game on Saturday at Bridgestone Arena to close out February. It's going to be February 29th, to be exact. But we'll tell you how. You'll have to answer a question from this interview on the other side for Avs-Preds tickets Saturday night. Be listening on the other side. Darren, Donnick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.